Hello and welcome to Sleeping Giants, the East Anglian Daily Times and Ipswich Stars sports podcast. Fearsome February got underway for the Blues on Saturday, and McCarthy's men weren't too far away from recording an unlikely victory. It certainly brings a small amount of positivity back to the club at the start of a run of very difficult fixtures, and there's been some good signs from the new signings as well. Stuart Watson, our chief football writer, is here to talk things over with me. Stuart, Reading were third when they came to Portman Road, and Town got a 2-2 draw out of them. That must be a fairly reasonable result, all things considered.
Absolutely, and it should have been more than a draw as well, but more than the result, it was about the performance. And boy, did we need a good performance, and we certainly got one. I don't know where it came from. It was a real surprise, a pleasant surprise. It was attractive football. It was easy on the eye football, and it was everything that Ipswich Town fans have been crying out for a long time. A positive starting lineup. Crucially, it looked like Mick McCarthy had sort of sent his players out with the instructions just to go and play and enjoy themselves, and the shackles were off. And the new boys made a real impact. They freshened the place up. They've added a bit of spark, and it's just given us a bit more encouragement for the games and the weeks ahead.
It's been said sort of in a few corners since the Reading result that the Reading probably weren't, or possibly weren't, playing at their best. They might have been a little bit off the boil. Was that the case? And if so, did it make Ipswich look a bit better than perhaps they actually were on the day?
I think we've got to give Ipswich credit. Reading were no great shakes on the day. They've obviously been playing better than that to be where they are in the table. But I think Ipswich have got to take all of the credit. They flew out of the blocks. They pressed high, they played with vim and vigour, they were bold and brave on the ball. And so, yeah, I'm not going to take anything away from Ipswich, because they, under a lot of pressure at the moment. Portman Road probably isn't the easiest place for them to be at the moment. And they won the crowd over. The crowd, you know, saw what their intent was from minute one, and it was... it's been a catch-22 situation. I think, you know, the fans have wanted to get behind the team. They've not been given something to get behind, and as has been proven in the home games that have gone well, the Blackburns, the Bristol Cities, and again on Saturday, if Ipswich start well and try to at least show that they're trying to play the right way, then the crowd will get behind them, and that happened on Saturday. And all was well in the world again, briefly.
I think you've touched upon it already, but what was the difference on Saturday to previous weeks and previous games? Was it anything slightly tactically different? Were there some tactical tweaks from McCarthy, or was it just the players sort of really stepping up to the mark in a big game?
Personnel rather than tactics. I was surprised that Mick went with wing-backs again, because it was pretty disastrous against Derby a few days earlier. I was convinced that he would go back to 4-4-2, which they'd looked a lot more solid in up at Preston the previous game, but he stuck with the wing-backs. But it was different because of the personnel that was in it. I think Stephen Taylor making his debut in that back three was a real sort of calming influence. We talked about the leadership and the character that he would bring to things. I think that seemed to settle down Luke Chambers and Christoph Behrer around him. Midfield was by far and away the biggest difference. You had Tumani Diagaraga and Emir Hughes in there. Two players that both want to play forward. They both want to pass forward. They both want to drive forward when they get the ball. And we've been saying for a long time, that's what Ipswich have lacked. Someone that doesn't want to get the ball, pass backwards, pass sideways. And so those two made a huge difference. Diagaraga sits fairly deep, but he wants the ball off the back all the time, and then he wants to turn and get playing. Emir Hughes was just a breath of fresh air in the way that he sort of drove with the ball. And then up front, it was a complete change up front. You had Tom Lawrence further forward up alongside David McGoldrick. Again, I had my reservations. I have to admit, when the team sheet came out, that I thought, well, they're both number 10 types. They're both going to want to drop and come and get the ball, and it's not going to leave Ipswich with much of a presence up front, certainly physically, or even someone just running on the last shoulder. But, you know, I guess good players work well together, and that's what happened with those two. They just seemed to be on the same wavelength. McGoldrick was another huge plus point. He looked like the player of old from a couple of years ago. Fantastic through ball for Tom Lawrence's second. So that worked well up front. Knudsen was improved at left wing back, and Josh Emmanuel had by far and away his best game for a long time at right wing back, marauding up and down. So all round, it was just a good performance.
With the new signings coming in, we've already spoken about Diagaraga on previous occasions. He'd obviously played before the Reading game, but Emma Hughes coming in, you're saying breath of fresh air. We sort of got that one a little bit wrong when we did the podcast last week. We expected Kiefer Moore to perhaps get a start and play up front and get some good game time, and Hughes maybe make an appearance from the bench, but McCarthy's thrown him straight in, and he looks to have won over the crowd with sort of the style of play that he's got.
Absolutely. I think he'd won over the crowd before he'd even kicked a ball when the news came out that he's taken a pay cut to come here. I've just come back from Playford Road this afternoon having interviewed him. He's another very sort of down-to-earth, humble lad that just wants to play football, and he just loves football. He's got a real sort of pedigree in terms of his background. You know, he's played, he's had 10 caps for Wales now, always been in and around their squad, played alongside Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey and the like for them, came through at Manchester City and was very highly thought of as a young teenager at Manchester City, made his debut alongside the likes of Aguero for them. So I've always been impressed with him whenever I've seen him play against Ipswich, whether it's for Wigan, Huddersfield, the clubs he's been at before. And I know people immediately go, well, he's not in Cardiff's team. If he can't get in their team, why has he come here? But sometimes, you know, wrong place at the wrong time. Your face doesn't fit. I think he was injured for Neil Warnock's debut game. Neil's got his team together, and sometimes it's just a long way back. And, you know, his face isn't fitting at Cardiff at the moment, but it certainly looks like it will do at Ipswich. But you're right, I think I didn't see him being chucked straight into the starting lineup because he's had one championship start in the last 6 months. But I guess Mick suddenly thought, well, they needed to shake something up after the Derby performance, and he took a bit of a gamble starting both him and Andy Agaraga, who's been short of game time at Leeds, and it's a gamble that certainly paid off.
You say about your face not fitting into a certain club, and that argument about, well, if Hughes couldn't get into the Cardiff team, why is he going to be any use to Ipswich? But of course, we've got experience of that here in Ipswich anyway, with McGoldrick, whose face obviously didn't fit at Forest and came here and had a wonderful season straight after. So clearly it's just something that it doesn't matter sort of what's happening at your current club, it's what you're willing to do as a player to sort of get yourself back out there. So it looks like Hughes could have quite a good run in the team sort of for the second half of the season.
Yeah, going on Saturday's performance, definitely. I mean, you know, picking up players with a point to prove has been Mick McCarthy's calling card, I guess, hasn't it, throughout his time at Ipswich, throughout his managerial career. I think he loves working with hungry players still, and you know, I guess that's what he has to do because of the restricted budget that he's on. He's got to go out and find people that are, you know, on the football scrap heap's probably a bit too strong, but people that have, you know, careers aren't quite going in the direction that they'd hoped or wanted, whether it be people that have dropped down from down into the lower leagues or non-league and working their way up, people like Freddie Sears and the non-league boys that we've mentioned, or experienced players that have, you know, it's not happening for them and not getting game time elsewhere as well. So he seems to do it pretty well, Mick, and he's done it time and time again, hasn't it? And I guess that policy, you're going to get some hits and misses. You're going to get players that blow hot and cold in that respect. But in the ones that he's got this window, I'm pretty encouraged by.
Talking about players that have been brought in quite recently, and as well players that have been at town for a while and are coming back from injury, a scoreline that I'm sure every Ipswich fan would love to hear: Ipswich 8, Watford 0. Unfortunately not in the Championship, but in the under-23s game during the week. Dominic Samuel, come in from Reading, couldn't play against his parent club, but he's gone and bagged a hat-trick in amongst those 8 goals, along with Monty Patterson as well. So very good signs both from Samuel, Tommy Smith coming back and playing in that game, as well as Teddy Bishop, and the prospects in the academy clearly doing well.
Yeah, I think a big part of Saturday as well, and in general, is they've got a stronger squad now. And I think you go back to that first Lincoln game in the FA Cup, I think it's not an exaggeration to say I think he had 12 fit outfield senior players at his disposal then. it was the team that he put out. I think Douglas on the bench, and then a load of academy kids alongside them. So I think subconsciously people can get comfortable in the team. I think mixed teams have always had, you know, he's been accused of having favourites that know that their place in the team is virtually guaranteed, and so this has maybe just livened things up a bit to bring in a few players, hungry players, as we've discussed, that are going to come into training and hit the ground hard, and it might just sort of wake a few of them up and think, okay, I've got to be on my toes a little bit more here. Dominic Sanyal, you know, we've discussed the encouraging start that some of the others made. We spoke a lot about Kiefer Moore in our last chat, and we've spoken about Hughes and Diagaraga and Taylor today. I'm encouraged to see what we're going to see from Dominic Sanyal as well, because reading a lot about him from a Reading perspective, their fans have been crying out for him to play for a long time now, and I think he's had a couple of pre-seasons where he's really shone for them in pre-season tours, and then had a little injury setback in the early stages of the season, and I think he would be an established player for them by now if it wasn't for that. So I've, you know, watched a few clips, and I guess highlight reels can be misleading sometimes, but he knows where the goal is, and he scored a hat-trick and, you know, the other night, which bodes well for sure.
So possibly get a look at him at the weekend. I mean, you'd expect, things having gone well against Reading, that the Mick will probably start with Tom Lawrence and David McGoldrick again up front, but Sanyal perhaps coming in from the bench at some point for a few tiring legs.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, you can't do much more than score a hat-trick on your debut for the T23s. He'll be a different type of player. I think he's been brought in as the more of the physical presence. He's pretty quick. I think that's what, you know, he was the one they've gone and got, having not been able to get a proper, inverted commas, Daryl Murphy replacement. He was the one that they've gone down the list to get. So I think if they want to play a different way, he'll be the man. If it's not working with Lawrence and McGoldrick sort of being the technically gifted footballers trying to sort of link up the way they did on Saturday, it will be different players for different games, and Sanyal will give them that different option.
Obviously, when we talk about the weekend, it's quite a difficult game, I think it'd be fair to say. Villa coming up this weekend, followed in quick succession by Brighton, both away games. What are we expecting to be a good points tally for Ipswich out of that? I mean, I don't think anyone in their right mind would say that's going to yield 6 points, but is four perhaps a possibility, or are we looking more at just the one or two?
Who knows? As I've been saying for a few weeks, I've kind of given up on predictions with Ipswich. They've been so Jekyll and Hyde this season. Mick himself sort of dryly observed that, you know, they'll probably go to Villa and be utterly useless now, having played pretty well at the weekend. That's just how the season's been. What I will say is there's a bit of pressure on both Villa and Brighton now. Villa, because, you know, they're continuing to spend big money. They brought in several players over the January transfer window. And so, you know, they'll be gelling a little bit still. It's a fresh team. I guess you could say the same about Ipswich. And then Brighton, you know, they've thrown a fair bit of money at it down in those parts, and they've come close to promotion a few times. And I get the feeling that if it doesn't happen for them this year, then they'll be under pressure to sort of cut that wage bill back next year. And as we've seen with Newcastle perhaps as well, you know, the pressure can do funny things to people when you get into this stage of the season. So Ipswich will be quietly confident with the performance that they've produced on Tuesday. It's certainly their two away games that would have held, you know, a fair bit of trepidation a few weeks ago. But, you know, perhaps now they think we've got nothing to lose, and if they go and play like Saturday, then you never know.
Well, look a bit further ahead now as well. Obviously, at the end of this month, we've got the derby coming up in Norwich at Carrow Road. Going into that match, I think probably many Ipswich fans could be quite pessimistic. Norwich are obviously a better team, having only recently been in the Premier League, but they've not been quite firing on all cylinders, and I think that the phrase that a lot of Norwich fans are using, if they're not a fan of Alex Neil, is the Alexit, in homage to Brexit. So, not going perfectly north of the Norfolk-Suffolk border. What do Town need to do between now and the end of February to be able to go up to Norwich and get a decent result?
keep producing performances like Saturday. It's as simple as that, I guess. I mean, Norwich seemed to have stabilised a little bit after that horrendous run they were on recently, but as you rightly say, I think there's a significant number of supporters north of the border that don't see Alex Neil as being the man to take them forward. So it would have been interesting had this game happened a couple of weeks ago when, you know, both teams were in a bit of a slump. But I guess a lot can change between now and then. As much as I was encouraged by the performance on Saturday, 1 point saw Ipswich drop nearer to the relegation zone. They're 8 points above it. Who knows what could happen in the next couple of games, and then Leeds at home as well. Leeds have really impressed me whenever I've seen them play as well. So it's three really tough games between now and the East Anglian derby, and if Ipswich only pick up, you know, 1, 2, 3 points from those three games, and suddenly you're right on the edge of the playoffs. And just as pressure can do funny things to people at the top, you know, Ipswich suddenly thinking, blimey, we're not quite as safe as we thought we were, that will heap the pressure on them as well. So it's hard to kind of preview that East Anglian derby at the moment, because I think, as we've previously discussed, it's all about confidence, it's all about momentum, and a lot could change between now and then.
There we go then. So something to look forward to at the end of the month, but some tough games to get through before then. That's all we've got time for on this week's Sleeping Giants. We'll be back again next week to review the Villa and Brighton matches and look ahead to the Leeds game as well. Thank you to Stuart, and thanks for listening.